So what I wanted to start off with is just, it seems quite a technical mouthful, this whole idea of psychological crutch. I was reading like psychology definition websites and things like that, and I was just like, wow, this is quite long. but it was the thing that got me kind of thinking about it, because I was trying to think in myself, is that one of the definitions they were saying, you know, like everybody has a crutch of some sort, because it's just, it's part of human nature. And I don't know whether you would agree with that or not, but that's sort of the thing that I was reading, is that, you know, we all sort of rely on something. And I was on my sister's hen do yesterday, hence why my hair is looking fabulous. So I was on my sister's hen do yesterday, and I know, fabulous. So we were sitting last night, just as we were sort of finishing off with a meal and everything, and one of my sister's friends started talking about how she's living up in Aberdeen at the moment, or just outside Aberdeen, and you know, it's the sort of the envy of anybody. You know, she's got a croft and she grows her own veg and she keeps pigs and come away with something like a quarter ton of pork when she finally got rid of them. And so you're sitting listening to Jude just chatting away, but one of the things that she was talking about was how in the last wee while she's been traveling back and forward to the States for work, and so for the best part of 6 months to probably a year she's not had a TV. I started to get a bit nervous then. And what she was saying is that she at first she found this quite hard, but she really liked coming back to her house and not having this TV, because there was no distractions. And then she said, the problem is, if there's no distractions. So when she was coming home, and you know, she's got a lot of stuff to do, she's very crafty and all that sort of stuff, but we started having this conversation about how, you know, I said to her, I like coming home, and Ek sort of, he just says his mind boggles at me because I watch some of the worst TV ever. And I'm like, but my brain just shuts down, and it's that thing where I don't, you know, I don't care what's on the TV. I'm watching nonsense, you know, like American sitcoms that are dire and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And Ek is like, how, Nikki, how? But it's the only way that I can come home from work. And my brain isn't being like, so did you order that stuff for that client? And did you reply to that email? And, you know, sort of like, it's this thing where I just can't shut down to it. And Jude was saying that she's finding that as well. So she went away, she came home from the States 3 weeks ago. And the first thing she done was she got in her van, went to Tesco's, bought a TV and just slobbed on the couch for an hour and a half. And she was like, it's the best night's sleep I've had in ages. So this kind of got me thinking, because I wanted to try and get you talking about stuff tonight. And so for me, I've worked out that my crutch to this was the one thing about being married that Ek just couldn't put up with me for. So my crutch is my reliance on TV to wind down, to the point that I need it to fall asleep. So thankfully technology has advanced now compared to when I was at uni. I had my TV and VCR sort of running off, and then I'd wake up, there was snow, turn it off, and then that would be me go back to sleep. So now I can sort of sit with my phone and my headphones under the covers and not disturb Ek, and then I'll drop off. So my crutch is that I can fall asleep. I need to fall asleep with the TV on. That's my crutch. I find I get a bit nervous if I can't do that to go to bed. And Jude was saying that she's decided that for as much as she wants to not have the TV in her life because she sees the benefit of it, she's realised that she quite likes having it to be able to unwind to. So I wanted to get you talking in your groups tonight, just to kind of start off, is there something within your week, your day-to-day, that you just have to do? That you get up in the morning and you have to go to the gym, you know, because you're great, or something like that. Is there something that you have to do in your week or in your day in order to sort of just get you through the day? Otherwise, you know, you're not going to have a good day or you're not going to have a good night's sleep. So a couple of minutes, go. If we can start to finish off the conversations. Okay, so now that we've started off by confessing our flaws to each other, we'll just sort of go into it. So I hope that it's one of those things that I kind of felt that to start off by sort of looking at it, it's quite a hard thing, because I think straight off the bat, we always think of, you know, sort of these crutches, these psychological crutches is sort of, you know, the big sort of topics, like maybe drugs and alcohol and that kind of thing. And it's sort of seeing how it sort of comes down to this idea that there's other little things that we do to make it maybe a little bit easier to understand. So hopefully that's been a little bit helpful in sort of getting to where I'm sort of thinking about it now. So through all the definitions and the debates, it's great because these websites, as you look in the comment sections, they just start arguing with each other as they go on. So there's a lot of debate for this, definitely. But I thought I'd put up these definitions again just to kind of help us get an idea of what we're talking about. So what is a crutch? So the psychology dictionary says, with regard to modern language, an uncertain way to deal with something, or a reinforcement mechanism that might be of a medicinal, psychological, or other nature. So I'll read that again. With regard to modern language, an uncertain way to deal with something, or a reinforcement mechanism that might be of a medicinal, psychological, or other nature. There's a dictionary definition which says someone or something that you depend on for support or help, especially too much. So there's certainly this sort of negative kind of feeling about the idea of a crutch. So that I think that is where this question comes from, and definitely in relation to Christianity. It started before, but Freud is the one that really sort of holds this argument as the main person. Anytime you Google it, it's Freud that just keeps coming up. And what he said was, they are illusions, fulfillments of the oldest, strongest, and most urgent wishes of mankind. As we already know, the terrifying impression of helplessness in childhood aroused the need for protection through love, which was provided by the Father. Thus, the benevolent rule of divine providence allays our fear of the dangers of life. So essentially what Freud is saying is that as we grow up and move into adulthood, the world is big and scary, but because we're adults, we can't really depend on our parents. So to have that sense of protection, we invented this notion of God as a loving father to make us feel safe as adults to go out and sort of be involved in the world and sort of get by on a day-to-day basis. So this is where this sort of thing as a psychological crutch comes from, is this idea that it's a projection. It's something we've made up to kind of comfort ourselves. And I found the thing that sort of got me started on what it was this great article by Amy Ewing. She just goes through it, and it was a great way that she broke it down, that sort of this argument that Freud puts forward. And basically the first thing that she was talking about was that this idea of it being a creation of the human mind, this sort of thing, a wish fulfillment of a loving father. That seems to, you know, hope that if you're sort of going to say that if you want something to comfort yourself, this seems like a good way to project something, to make something up, this idea of a loving father. But the whole counter argument to this thing of faith being a psychological crutch is whether you think it is God real, or is God fake or made up. The counter argument for this idea of us making something up for our comfort can also then be sort of used to turn this argument sort of on its head, you know, face it in the other direction of the idea that we've made something up because we need that protection of a loving, good father to give us strength as adults out in the world, that the atheists, the people that sort of counter this argument, are people who don't want a loving father to give them support and structure in this world because they want to be able to make their own choices and do their own thing. So really, this idea of it being something that we've created in our minds is sort of, it doesn't really sort of hold, because you can automatically turn it right back on its head and point at the question in the other direction. It also then assumes that everybody has sort of grown up in a loving family, and then they can then sort of take that on to their adult life. And so those that didn't have a loving family sort of, you know, don't want that loving father. So it sort of brings it quite far down into, you know, you've had a loving family, you need that support and strength in order to function as an adult, so you've created God. If you didn't have that loving family when you were growing up, how did you come up with it? It's a very broken down argument, because you're assuming that everybody's psychological makeup is generating this for the same reason. It starts to get a bit messy, because what Freud is saying is that the background for Freud is that he didn't have a loving family. He came from a very bad background. His dad, I think, was abusive. So the counter argument that is given to his statement is that he doesn't want a loving father figure, this benevolent God, because his family background was a bad one. But it's not as straight cut as that. Does that make sense? It's not one or the other. I know people that are Christians that were from bad backgrounds. I know people that are Christians that are from good backgrounds. I know people that aren't Christians. You know, so it's that sort of thing, that to rely on our psychology in order to create something, it doesn't sort of come from this one sort of background. So it gets messy and a bit complicated, but it doesn't fly as an argument. Does that make sense? I don't want to sort of go on, because it is quite confusing, and I don't want to sort of labour this too much and confuse everybody. So basically, the automatic response to this idea that we've created this God figure is that it cuts both ways, essentially. If you don't want a God figure, there's no God figure. So it doesn't hold true just because you say it is that way. So then it comes back to this thing again of whether God exists for you or not. And I'm taking the stance that God exists. So for me to then create it, and for you to create it, it seems too much that everybody's creating the same God if he doesn't exist. So this idea then, I've got a quote here from C.S. Lewis, which I think just really works best. Creatures are not born with desires unless satisfaction for these desires exist. So they give this idea of a man who's adrift at sea and he's thirsty. So from that, we can take this idea that water will satisfy his thirst. But there's no water that's there while he's at sea that can satisfy that thirst. But he's thirsty. So there's a desire there for the thirst. So water must exist. So our desire for God to be there seems like a natural argument that our desire is inherent of something actually being there. So this idea that it's just made up and it's part of our psyche, it's a really flimsy argument. So I really love this idea of it's the thing that they talk about at Alpha, you know, the gap in your stomach, that it's there, that gap, whatever you try and fill it, it's only going to be filled because it was designed as God-shaped. So this desire that we have, that we look for God, is there because we were designed with that desire, and that proves the existence of God. So it gets a bit messy and a bit sort of all over the place, but essentially it's not a great argument because it doesn't sort of hold very well. This other one that come up is this idea that because we need a crutch of sorts means that we're weak. So that this quote that I found was, "Organized religion is a sham and a crutch for weak-minded people who need strength in numbers." That one got me quite angry because I was just like, how dare you? Because it's that thing that it's sort of saying that because you believe in something, you're weak-minded. Now, you know, I know I'm a lot of things, but I would like to think that I'm not weak-minded. You know, I can make my mind up myself. I'm not quite as impressionable, especially as an adult. I'm not quite as impressionable as I was when I was young. So to turn around and say to somebody that because you're weak-minded is another reason why you need this psychological crutch of a God figure just really got me like, oof, I saw that guy in the street, I'd be having words. You know, it's really sort of that kind of thing that just, oh, that really got me. And again, Google's not a great thing, but I Googled sort of like the opposite for the "Is faith a psychological crutch?" And it's great because you get all these nice articles and things about, you know, how to sort of counter the argument. And then down at the bottom of Google, it's sort of a quote, "Faith's a psychological crutch." And then it's just boom, all these people just slamming Christianity. And oh yeah, I had to close that browser window quick. This idea that faith, you have faith because you're weak, is a really, I think, you know, for the amount of people that actually believe in something in this world, again, sort of, there billions of people cannot be weak-minded, you know, and I know that people at times of weakness have faith. But billions of people in this world cannot be weak-minded because they have faith. That just seems too impossible for such an affliction. You know, people are not that easily persuaded. We're actually quite, or in my opinion, we're quite stubborn, I think. Especially in the Western world, or, you know, in Edinburgh, or on my street. We're quite stubborn as people. So to sit there and just think that you could be pushed into this idea because you're weak-minded really does, gets my blood going. But the thing as well is, sort of, again, if you come from the viewpoint that God exists and the faith that we have is real, there was this great quote from Daniel Roger, another article that I found is, "Why would you follow something that you know would only make life harder for yourself?" You know, if you're gonna, so if I go back to the quote, "Organized religion is a sham and a crutch for weak-minded people who need strength in numbers." You're going to do this because it makes life better. Why would you follow something that you know would only make life harder for yourself? In Matthew 16, verses 24 to 26, Jesus said to his disciple, "If any of you want to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your own soul? Is anything worth more than your soul?" That doesn't make it sound like it's all roses, posies and great smelling coffee. That just really sort of, you know, so that's why it makes me so angry, is just that it's a sham for the weak-minded because we need the comfort of others. It just boggles my mind that that's even a sort of an argument on that, because anybody that you speak to that has faith knows that you're giving up your life. I was reading about you probably I'm so behind on everything, but I've just discovered this amazing Christian pastor called A.W. Tozer, and everybody's just like, where have you been? But I like, so I've just found out about this guy, and because he came up a lot while I was researching this as well. And listening to the stuff that he was saying, you know, like he gave up so much in his life. They refused to get a car. They took the bus and the train everywhere. They had next to nothing, sort of as far as material earthly things are concerned, because they felt that their life was to be reflecting more than how great their house was or the size of their TV. Although I think, you know, probably back then it was probably like the size of your radio or, you know, something. But they you know, they really just, they knew the sacrifice that had to be made in order to get across the word of God. And it was really inspiring, sort of like reading about him and the stuff that he was saying. And I've ordered his books and all this sort of stuff, so I'm catching up. But it was just, it was just amazing to hear about his, the sacrifice that he made. And even the books that he ended up publishing, all the royalties were given to those that were in need. He didn't take them for himself. He was giving that money away to other people in need. So he knew that his life as a servant of Christ was to be a servant, you know, to have nothing and to just lay it all down on the line. So this idea that, you know, you're weak-minded or you're weak because you follow, I think, again, this argument is, if it's real and you believe God exists, you're not signing up for a cozy life. And it's not, no, I'm not going to, I was going to get critical of something else here and I'm going to stop myself because that wouldn't be right. So it's not just sort of, you know, comfy sofas and lovely sort of book readings and stuff like that. It's hard graft if you really sort of make a commitment to God and to the faith and to be Christ-like. It's not, you hang up your life, you know, you give it all up. So it's a massive thing to do, to take on. So I wanted to quote Tozer. So this thing for I wanted to go back to this idea of the definition of a crutch, someone or something that you depend on for support or help, especially too much. That negative, especially too much, that negative connotation to it. And so I love this quote. I found the guy's been dead for so long, but he's got a Twitter account. How amazing is that? So I found this quote from Twitter. So it was like, if something is of God, your dependence on God will increase. So that quote there kind of puts that top one on its head, because, you know, a crutch is something negative, or it appears to be something negative that you're hanging on to too much. But the quote in the bottom from Tozer is, if something is of God, your dependence upon God will increase. You know, so you're going to rely on God more. So in the end, my sort of, is it a crutch, isn't it? You know, I started liking this idea of faith being this crutch. Because when you look at what crutches are, they're, you know, it's because you've maybe had a point of weakness in your life, you know, like medically, you've broken your leg, or you've, you know, my mother-in-law, she uses crutches because she had a hip replacement and it sort of didn't go well, so she now needs the crutches. Otherwise, she just drops to the floor. So they give her strength. And this is something over a long term that she's going to need to rely on. So in that sense, a crutch, medically, a crutch is not a bad thing. You know, it strengthens, it gives support to an area that's maybe weak within the body. You know, it serves a purpose. So this idea of faith being a psychological crutch as a bad thing doesn't necessarily have to fly as true. So, another really great quote that I found was from this guy, Rusty Wright. He said, my mentor, Bob Prowell, has often said, if Christianity is a psychological crutch, then Jesus came because there was an epidemic of broken legs. Christianity claims to meet real human needs, such as those for forgiveness, love, identity, and self-acceptance. We might describe Jesus not as the crutch, but an iron lung essential for life itself. So forget the crutches, you know, flimsy bits of wood or metal. You know, this is Jesus is something that you are wholeheartedly throwing yourself upon for strength, for comfort, for support, you know, just getting through your day to day. And for me, this rings true. For me, this is something that I can actually say I can get behind this. So, you know, this idea of somebody turning around and saying to me, oh, you know, you only believe in God because it's a psychological crutch. I just, but you better believe it. You know, I need it because otherwise I just don't think that I could get through life. And if that makes me sound weak, then, you know, that's on you. That's not on me. I know sort of the support and the strength that I get from my faith and the comfort that that brings me is an amazing thing. And so it's something that's actually quite exciting. And then another thing that I found, and I thought this was great. This was, it was so tempting not to just take this whole guy's presentation and just sort of, you know, put a better design slant on it and be like, look what I came up with. But I did steal one of his slides, because he actually went into this thing of the right way to use Christianity as a crutch. And it's he references verses from the Bible, and the first one is, if life has knocked you down, Christ can help you get on your feet again. You know, I can attest to that. I think that's a great I know that that is true. When we're afraid of death, Christ promises eternal life. I can sort of agree with that. I know that that is true about my faith. When we feel very guilty, Christ offers forgiveness. That's something that this world doesn't offer you. You know, if you feel guilty about something, this world just wants to let you live with that guilt and just soak in it and get pruny with it. Whereas Christ wants to offer you forgiveness. When we're in a crisis, Christ can keep us standing. When we're sad, God comforts us. And I can so totally sort of count to, or testify to that one, because when ex-dad died at the end of May, you know, when we were talking about it, it really was our faith that kept us strong and gave us comfort. So when times are sad, God comforts us. And sometimes we just need to be propped up and carried. There's two examples from the Old Testament in there. So all of these things, and I'm aware of time. I didn't want to go there. There's Bible references there. So if you want to get these references to see where they're from and read them, I'm happy to give them to you to take away and read them. But there's biblical backing for Christianity as a crutch. And don't think I'm skipping over the Bible and sort of not going to do it, because I've decided I was really, really chuffed to see that my favourite psalm was the ultimate sort of example of your faith and as God being a crutch for you. And I was just like, yeah, it just was so exciting, because I found this psalm at a time when I felt at my absolute lowest, and I was on my knees crying out to God, being like, I just need help. And I was in my room on my knees, I'd had enough, and I was just weeping that God would give me strength. And he gave me Psalm 18. And those of you that know me and have heard me speak before know that I do bang on about this psalm a lot. So I feel really justified now to be able to slip it in again. And it's a long psalm, so I've kind of condensed it a bit, but I've also highlighted bits where you can see that there's a sort of a thing where it would be a crutch, where you need support. And then highlighted the bit where David is talking about God strengthening him and supporting him. So I'm just going to read it to you. And it is a condensed version, and I've missed out the bit where, you know, God killed his enemies and brought them through the battle, but I would recommend you reading this as well, but in full. Back, this was what I could fit onto the slide. So, I love you, Lord, you are my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress and my saviour. My God is my rock in whom I find protection. He is my shield, the power that saves me and my place of safety. But in my distress, I cried out to the Lord. Yes, I prayed to God I prayed to my God for help. He reached down from heaven and rescued me. He drew me out of deep waters. He rescued me from my powerful enemies, from those who hated me and were too strong for me. They attacked me at a moment when I was in distress, but the Lord supported me. He led me to a place of safety. He rescued me because he delights in me. You light a lamp for me. The Lord my God lights up my darkness. In your strength I can crush an army. With my God I can scale any wall. God's ways is perfect. All the Lord's promises prove true. He is a shield for all who look to him for protection. For who is God except the Lord? Who but our God is a solid rock? God arms me with strength, and he makes my ways perfect. He makes my way perfect. He makes me as sure-footed as a deer, enabling me to stand on mountain heights. He trains my hands for battle. He strengthens my arm to draw a bronze bow. You have given me your shield of victory. Your right hand supports me. Your help has made me great. You could probably just go away and actually sort of highlight the whole of that. Because David is crying out for God to help him, and then rejoicing in the way that God has strengthened and supported him and brought him through an amazing trial. And so for me, this idea of faith being a psychological crutch, you could walk away and just be so offended by it because somebody is saying that you've created something out of your imagination or inferring that you're weak-minded. Or you could sit and turn around and say to them, actually, yes, and that's what gives me strength. It's what makes me bold. It's what comforts me. It what makes me get up in the morning. You know, all of this, it's comforting, it's empowering, it's strengthening, and it's something that really assures you. So in the end, I don't find this sort of a great argument at all by anybody because, you know, what are they saying to me? Oh, you trust in God too much. Oh, no. You know, that's essentially to me what it feels like they're saying. And that's not an argument for anything to do with how my faith is affected or how it affects me. So I hope that it's something that, you know, you in future, when you're thinking about maybe the crutches that you have to be able to get through your day or through your week, that if you have a faith in a God who is real, as we do, and as a God who sent his son to die for us and was resurrected and came back to life to forgive all of our sins, all of that, if you believe all of that, you will never, ever, ever have to be worried about somebody saying that you're relying on this too much or at all, or even slightly, because it's kind of a compliment in my mind. So we're just going to finish with a song, and That's us.
Just thank you, Nikki. Thank you. You've started all train of all